The father of one of the students murdered at the University of California, Santa Barbara last Friday has inspired a movement. Not one more. Richard Martinez told politicians who expressed their sympathy to him over the loss of his son, Chris, that he doesn't want their sympathy. He wants their action. We will talk about how this grieving father is coping with the death of his son and broaden our discussion to include how and why we grieve and how we can heal and how we can help those who are grieving. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, May 29th. We will welcome your questions and we will welcome your experiences about how to cope with grieving and what we should say to people who are grieving, what helps and what doesn't. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Frank Farley. He is the Laura H. Carnell Professor of Psychological, Organizational, and Leadership Studies at Temple University. He is a former president of the American Psychological Association and a former UW-Madison professor. Good morning, Professor Farley.
Good morning, Joy.
That's a brand new long title that you have.
We restructured the department and added a couple of more characteristics to it. And it's a mouthful.
Yes, and we will call you Psychologist Frank Farley most of the time.
That's the easiest.
Yeah, so first off, while we aren't going to be going into great depth as to what happened at the University of California, Santa Barbara last Friday, it was the very public demonstration of Richard Martinez's grief that got us to thinking about grief. What is your reaction on how he's responding to the murder of his son?
I think he's responding in a very healthy and positive and an important way. He's doing something that we sometimes see in response to these kind of events by a grieving, loved one, which is to do something about it, not just grieve over it, but decide to work on or commit oneself to a follow-up. So, for example, Megan's Law is an example. Mr. Martinez is talking to a large extent about gun control and having to deal with that, mental health issues. And so the grieving person gets involved in change, in action, in something coming out of it that they will be committed to, they will follow up on, and, attempt to prevent this kind of thing from ever happening again. Writ large, we saw this in the aftermath of the Holocaust. Never again, was the mm-hmm. mantra or one of them. And that, to me, is a very healthy way of dealing with grief.
Yeah, why is that? So, why is that healthy?
Well, it sort of gives one direction. It raises some challenges. One can focus one's energies in a positive way to make a change, to prevent something from happening that should never happen in the first place, and so prevent it going forward. And so I think that's very positive. Some people simply grieve, and they have sadness, they have depression, and so on. And, of course, that's natural. It's a natural process. But his example is one of, pulling himself together, getting a focus, getting a major task that was relevant to the whole source of the grieving, and working toward a better world in a nutshell. And so it's positive.
Yeah. Not to dwell too much on it, but if this movement is not successful and the change does not happen, change did not happen after the Sandy Hook shootings, for example, what happens then? I mean, it was all for naught, and his grief continues?
It could. Mm-hmm. You know, he could sort of bottom out if it all collapses and there's no success. Honestly, you know, with the level of violence in America and particularly mass murders like this one, we're a long, long way from preventing this, a long way. And we need much more research into what underlies it, what's the role of mental health, for one thing. We haven't even gotten into, in many of the discussions, the possible role of the biology and genetics, and then there's the role of upbringing and family and social influences. There's so much that we don't know with certainty. And so, one doesn't want to be negative about this kind of thing, but the it's a Sisyphean task, and his efforts may help. I hope they do, but I'm not going to hold my breath that his efforts and those of many others in America are going to end the mass murder violence anytime soon.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the process of grief itself. What is grief?
Well, it shows many of the symptoms of depression. Honestly, you have things like sadness, rage, for some people, a lack of energy, physical discomfort, a sort of a dark or bleak mood, a pessimistic mood. Lack of joy in daily activities, too little sleep or too much sleep. So there's a set of qualities that are often characteristic of grieving. Grieving can show individual differences so that people can grieve in different ways, but there are some common threads, some common ingredients, like the ones I've mentioned. And it can be short-lived or, it can go on for a significant period of time. But it's a normal process. And I think that it's unusual, if you've lost a loved one, to not grieve. I mean, I can't even imagine the feelings when you lose a child. It's just got to be, overwhelming. And to not grieve is unusual.
Yeah, so it is a normal process, but it is different in different people. Are there, for example, Frank Farley, are there stages of grief?
Well, there's a famous model, the Kubler-Ross model of five stages of grief. And those five stages, just to briefly mention them, are denial, then anger, then what's called bargaining, then depression, and then finally acceptance of the loss. The problem with the Kubler-Ross model is that it's been highly debatable. It seemed like it might be some universal set of stages that people go through, but not everybody does go through them. It's the closest thing, though, to a sort of structure of grieving, a fixed pattern of grieving, and is a very popular model, and it works for some people, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah, and Richard Martinez was made news when especially politicians were expressing their sympathy, their condolences. And And Richard Martinez says, I don't want your sympathy. And he used an expletive there, too. I want you to do something about this. And talk a little bit about do grieving people want sympathy?
Some do, yes. And sometimes it can be very helpful, of course. One of the key things in grieving is sharing. You know, sharing your grief with loved ones, and I would argue, hopefully positive people, positive loved ones, sharing it with people who are upbeat, who are positive. So, yes, I mean that can be good. In his case, you know, it's fully understandable that he doesn't want their sympathy. He wants their action. And given the national debate on such things as gun control and mental health, et cetera, that is fully understandable. You know, we have a Congress that you mentioned, Sandy Hook. In the wake of Sandy Hook, everyone was exercised over this. Everyone was concerned in this country, and very little has come of it. I called, for example, for one thing I think we need is a national violence project akin to the space program, akin to the Human Genome Project. These are massive, big projects that have led to enormous change in the world. And so the Human Genome Project, you know, unraveled the human genome, basically. The Moon Project of the late 1960s got us to the moon. Et cetera. Apollo, everyone knows of that. We need that in violence. You know, we need to bring together the best and the brightest. We need to find solutions. And basically, we're not. There's nothing really comprehensive and organized and targeted and directed. And a part of the reason is the lack of action among politicians and among leaders. And so Mr. Martinez is on the money where that's concerned. And I think most of us want action, and we're not getting a lot of it.
We're talking with Frank Farley. He is a psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association, about grief. And we're welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your own stories on how you dealt with grief, and we welcome your thoughts and comments on what helps someone who is grieving and what doesn't. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about grief with psychologist Frank Farley during this hour, and we are welcoming your questions for him and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Michael writes on Facebook, grief is the letting go of the future that a person has had in mind. However long it takes to let go of that future and accept that it will not happen is how long it will take to get over the grief caused by the event. He goes on to say that not only can you grieve the loss of a loved one, but there's the loss of a job or another loss of some sort of a life event. Frank Farley, we can grieve not just over the death of a loved one.
Yes, sure. What if you love your work, whatever it might be, and something happens so that you can no longer pursue that, and it has been central to your life? You know, one of the important things that we find increasingly in research on happiness is meaningful activities, that you find meaning in what you are doing, and this makes you happy. And what if you're prevented from that, from continuing that? And so that can be a source of grief, definitely.
Yeah. And does Michael have it right that we're grieving the future that we had in mind?
Yes. Mm-hmm. In I think many cases, a child growing up, graduating from school, going on to college, creating a life, and if that is terminated, snuffed out in a senseless killing, then that alters your whole future, yeah, your expectations of the future.
Dee in Oak Creek is with us. Hello, Dee.
Hi. I just had a comment about the type of grief, and people just don't understand the kind of grief a parent goes through when they lost a child. It's so totally different than losing a parent or a brother or a sister. I equate it to post-traumatic stress disorder. I lost my son 13 years ago, and people just don't understand that type of grief because you don't experience it. I didn't experience it when I lost a parent or a friend or an aunt or anybody else, but when I lost my son, it was just so totally different that people don't understand that. They expect you to just be okay in a month, and it takes years for a parent to grieve for a child.
Oh, I can't even imagine, Dee. I'm so sorry for your loss. And would people, I don't know, would people say things like, oh, I know how you feel, I lost my parent last year, that kind of thing?
Exactly, or I lost my favorite pet. It's like, excuse me, you really don't understand how this process works when you lose a child. And my son was 17 when he died, and that was 13 years ago. And I'm still grieving for my son.
I would imagine, I'm so sorry. And I would imagine that you will always feel that loss to some extent. Frank Farley, what do you say?
Well, firstly, Dee, I am so sorry to hear that. And yes, it can go on, I think, for your whole life. And I personally think that people who lose a child, for example, and can grieve for a brief period of time and then sort of move on with no further grieving, to me, that's not normal. And, children are so precious and so important in our lives, and all of the time and commitment we give to them and that they give to us in the joy and the unfulfilled future and the unfulfilled life, these are devastating things. And to not grieve is, in my view, highly unusual. And frankly, it can go on, for your whole life. I lost my first wife many, many years ago, and I still, feel a sense of grief. And children, oh my gosh, it's unimaginable.
Yeah, I didn't know that about you either, Frank Farley, and that I'm sorry for your loss as well. Dee, talk some about, do people tell you to or expect you to be over it or to get over it?
They did. A month after my son died, my other son was told I should act like an adult. Excuse me. I should act like an adult and get over it. You don't. People think you should be back to normal within a few months. It doesn't work that way. It's year. I mean, I cried for 2 years every day, and I still cry every so often. And it's been 13 years. It's hard to explain the death of a child versus the death of somebody else. And until you experience that, people don't understand. And when people would say to me, well, God needed him, or is he better up in heaven? Or my son died from an accident. He fell off his motorcycle and suffered head injuries. And it's like, oh, maybe I can think of him riding his motorcycle up in heaven. And it's like, well, I'm glad you can do that, because I have to think about him not coming home. So, you know, people mean well, and I understand that. But when a person is grieving for as something as like a child, those kind of words did not help me. It just kind of upset me even more. So I guess what I can say about when a person is going through the grief of especially a child, just listen. They know you can't fix it, because there's no fix to it. But at least just listen.
That's good advice, Dee. Isn't it, Frank Farley, if someone is grieving, just listen. You don't have to necessarily say anything.
Yes, you know, but just sort of being there for them is helpful. But I'd also like to say that, you know, the loss of a loved one, no matter whether a child, a spouse, and so on, or a sibling, and all that, is it can be really devastating for people.
I'm going to hold you there, Frank Farley, because we have news from NPR coming up next, and then we'll continue after the news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Have you experienced grief? We all have, I'm sure. What helped you? And how can we help others who are grieving? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, May 29th. We are talking about grief with Frank Farley, who is the Laura H. Carnell Professor of Psychological, Organizational, and Leadership Studies at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association, and a former UW-Madison faculty member. And we are welcoming your questions and your experiences. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take another call. John in Boaz. That's right. John in Boaz, go ahead.
Hello. It's been over 10 years now for me, and I just want to say the best thing is programs like yours, Joy, where you're sharing and caring about grief, and professionals like Frank, who really take an understanding. And then it can help with the healing, which is most important to me, because I was involved with the investigation of 8 young college students drowning to death. And it's total shocking, because if anything ever happened to my son, I'd probably be ruined.
Yeah.
But there's the healing process, and that's the best thing I can say. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, John. I thought John was going to say that he was, the best thing to do is get professional help. What do you have to say about that, Frank Farley?
Well, if the grieving is truly interfering with your personal life, your family life, your work life, then see a professional. There are lots of psychologists and psychiatrists and social workers out there who have experience with grieving, and they're available. And again, if it's interfering seriously with one's personal life or one's work life or other activities, it would be very helpful to see a professional.
Yeah. Well, he also mentioned sharing and caring and talking with those who care and sharing grief. You also recommend that you should share your grief, at least with those close to you.
Yes, I do. You know, in psychology, we sometimes use the term social animal. Humans are social animals. We're not isolate or lone animals. We tend to be social animals. And this shows up so early in our lives, where we enjoy socializing with others and relating to others and so on. And that's one of our great strengths. And so call on that strength if you're grieving. Share your concerns and your feelings and your emotions with other loved ones. I mentioned earlier, particularly with positive ones, you know, people who look on the bright side of life, who look on the positive side, to give you some kind of an uplift so that you don't just continue to see the darkness, but you can see some light.
Yeah. Some of your other thoughts in relationship to grieving, and I'm assuming that this has to do with a very public tragedy like the shootings at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Avoid too much media coverage?
Yes. What's that old phrase? If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
And so the media has so much coverage of negative, horrific, dark, and terrible things. And that's not going to lift you up very much.
Well, so even if it's not that your loved one didn't die in some massive or public event, you're saying just avoid it in general, because you're just going to see tragedy after tragedy after tragedy on the news.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you shouldn't probably live in total isolation what's going on in the world. But sometimes, particularly if you have some connection to the source of the grief, then limiting your exposure to the relentless 24/7 coverage of it or related events, I think is a good thing. You know, if you go back to 9/11 and the relentless coverage there, and where people were afraid that we were under invasion in this country, and, you know, there was a lot of fear, and you know, even then I was suggesting, you know, to limit your exposure to that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help to constantly repeat the same exposure over and over and over again. You need to break that cycle and get into something that's a little bit more positive and a little bit more uplifting.
Yeah. You suggest talk about the positive things of the lost loved one and all the positive attributes, the uplifting positive things about that person. Why is that important?
Well, you're celebrating that person. You're celebrating their wonderful, positive attributes. And nothing's better than that. That is just, you know, so strong. And sometimes people will even, you know, laugh and enjoy memories of the person. The father and brother of one of the victims, a woman from the Santa Barbara massacre, was interviewed yesterday, an interview that I watched, and they were enjoying, in a sense, the wonderful positive attributes that she had, how she got along with her brother, funny incidents that they recalled. And that's healthy. You know, one very important thing for people to keep in mind is the lost one, the loved one who has been lost, doesn't want you to go into a tailspin and destroy your life because of what happened to them. And that's always so important to keep in mind. They don't want you to go down the drain, to destroy yourself over what happened to them. That would be the last thing they would want. So focusing on their wonderful qualities, the positive memories, that's healthy.
Sue in Watertown is with us now. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I lost both of my boys as teenagers in two separate accidents. They were born a year and a half apart and died a year and a half apart. And the only thing that kept me going was that I had a daughter, and I knew if I didn't take care of myself that it would be so detrimental to her. I was a therapist, and after a year, I was told that I should probably go into therapy to deal with this grief. I went to see a counselor, and he told me if I wasn't over it in a year, something was wrong with me. So I would be very leery. If you're going to go into therapy, you better know that you're going to get someone that knows what they're doing. And I really don't know what they could do for you because it's something you learn to live with. You never get over it.
A reaction to that, Frank Farley?
Yes, I agree. You know, there is a significant element in the helping community, particularly the psychiatric community, that does say you need to get over this in a limited period of time, and if you don't, then it may be a disorder. I disagree with that, and I tend to agree with Sue. My gosh, what a tragic loss. And you know, it's, to me, it's abnormal to not continue for a significant period of time to feel that loss emotionally and in your heart. And so one thing that Sue mentioned was how important it was that her daughter was with her. And that comes back to that whole issue of having other people involved in your grieving and how healthy and helpful that can be. And so I'm so happy that she had a daughter to be with her going through this.
We're talking with Frank Farley. He is a psychologist at Temple University, and we are talking about grief. We've seen a lot of grief these days, including the grieving father of one of the students who was murdered at the University of California, Santa Barbara, last Friday. And we thought we would talk about how we grieve, how we can heal, how we can help those who are grieving. What should we say when we encounter someone who is grieving? What helps and what doesn't help? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about grief and what we might do to help someone who is grieving. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Frank Farley. He's a former UW-Madison psychologist, a former president of the American Psychological Association. He is currently a psychologist at Temple University, and he's our go-to psychologist when there are psychological-related issues in the news. Rocky in Hillsboro is with us next. Hi, Rocky.
Yeah, good morning. Some people are better at expressing sympathy than others, and I'm not one of those that's sympathetic. I don't care to go to funerals. Some people actually seem to do like it. They're good at the hugging and the weeping, and I'm so sorry and all this. And my dad was 50 when I was born. My mother was in her early 40s. And I can remember, youngest of a large family, I can remember laying in bed and just wondering, oh, my God, you know, what's going to happen? When I was like in grade school, what's going to happen when my dad dies and all this kind of stuff? Well, in truth, not a whole lot happened except he died. We all carried on. We all kind of had things to do. Well, it's nothing like I'm going to say, as someone who doesn't have kids, like losing a family, a child or something, but some people seem to like to grieve. There seems to be something that they're almost like perpetual grievers. And I've always had a kind of a philosophy, I never look over my shoulder. I only look straight ahead, and you have a lot of things to do and not a lot of time to do them. And I almost have to stop and say, I know, that's terrible, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I suppose that makes me cold and callous, but I don't care. Nothing would ever get done if everybody else, when I think back of the pioneers who had all kinds of obstacles, diseases and animals and accidents, and if everybody just stopped what they're doing to grieve, you know, nothing would ever, no good would ever come of it.
I don't think you're cold and callous, Rocky. I kind of understand that, I guess, some of us, Frank Farley, might expect to lose an elderly parent. We might, you know, be sad and for a while, but life goes on.
Yes, of course, and death is a part of life. And another point, too, that's implied by Rocky or stated by Rocky is that there are huge individual differences in how we deal with everything in life. You know, some people aren't very don't show much empathy. We often talk about two types of empathy. One is cognitive empathy. That is, I understand your grief. I understand your pain. That's the end of it. The other type of empathy is emotional empathy, where I feel your grief. I feel your loss. I feel your pain. And some people, you know, are more on the cognitive empathy side. Some are on the emotional empathy side. Some show very little empathy at all. And that's the human condition. Enormous variety of reactions to things really characterizes the human species. And so Rocky has one approach to grieving or grief and all these issues we're talking about today. And I would imagine that among your listeners, there's just an incredible range of perspective and reaction to grief.
Karen in Madison is with us. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Joy. Thank you. My younger brother suddenly died just before Christmas in another state, and I drove down and tried to make it in time for the funeral, and for a variety of reasons, didn't make it by just hours. And the guilt is gnawing at me, and, of course, my family, you know, are kind of lame. I mean, they're not on me all the time, but it's there that I didn't make it to that funeral. How can I get past that guilt? I feel terrible about it, of course.
I'm sorry, Karen. Any guidance, Frank Farley?
Well, I think, you know, job one is to just keep talking with your family and the relatives and those involved, and, you know, keep talking with them, work it through with them, you know, making it crystal clear that you tried as hard as you could and things didn't work out. And that itself is a part of life, and that you don't love your lost brother any less, of course, because of that, and that he wouldn't want, you know, the family to get, you know, too, I don't know what the word would be, but to get too critical when your heart was in the right place.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing. Your heart was in the right place, and it just didn't quite work out. And, you know, I'm sure that your brother would not want any problems in the family because of it.
Thank you, Karen. Jude in Ellison Bay is with us. Hello, Jude.
Good morning. A few moments ago, your guest mentioned that people ask what they can do to help. And I've noticed that, you know, you try to find those right words, but there's really not much anyone else can do that helps except to listen. And the person that's grieving, what they really want to do is be able to talk about that person, because it brings that person back in those moments. And so if you are not uncomfortable with that, because some people just want to scurry away from grief, you know, they want to say something about call me if you need anything, but they really don't want to hear a lot about it. But if you can hold still and let them just talk about their person and their memories, that's the biggest help, because that's what they really want to do, is bring them back in that talking.
Yeah. Frank Farley?
Yes. I couldn't have said it better myself, for sure.
Yeah.
And give the time. If the person who's grieving is a loved one or a dear friend, give them the time. Give them your ear and share it with them.
The call me if you need anything. Sometimes we don't know what to say, so we say that. Do you have something better we can say?
Well, that's not actually all that bad. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's better than I suppose it's better.
Yeah, it opens the door, and so I don't see it as so bad. But if you can go further and sort of literally make yourself available, rather than just, you know, here's my number, give me a call, make yourself available somehow, that's probably much better.
Yeah. Let's take Mary in Pewaukee next. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I wanted to just say two different things. One is I don't believe I heard anyone bringing up the fact that grief can sometimes hit you like almost like a physical blow. When my brother lost his son, I didn't know how bad it was and went to the hospital. And when my brother walked out of the where they had his son and had taken him off life support, he had his head down and shook his head no when he saw me, meaning, you know, that his son was gone. And I ended up dropping, you know, to my knees. It's such it was such a shock, and being a young person, 18 years old. The second is that when my mother-in-law asked me how he died just a few weeks ago, the relating of the story was almost like I was there again, and I relived it in my brain, and I cried like a baby, just as I had, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and we're almost out of time. Grief can come back like that, Frank Farley?
Oh, yes, of course. And it can have that kind of memorial quality to it, you know, the reconstructing and bringing a memory back that was highly led to great grief earlier. And sure, I mean, that's, why sometimes anniversaries can be, you know, very difficult.
Well, in our last minute, do you have any, I don't know, last words of advice for someone who's grieving, and whether or not, is this going to take some time?
It will take time in most cases, but let me point out, the human race and all of us humans are amazingly resilient, and that includes all of us. And, and you will get through this.
Yeah. And
again, if it's interfering seriously with your life, then get professional help. But
we'll leave it there, Frank Farley.
We're amazingly resilient.
Thank you very much. This is the Ideas Network.